Welcome back to another episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. Today, we're sharing all of the financial advice we'd give our 18-year-old selves. But regardless of where you are in your financial journey, this advice could still be so applicable. As always, before we dive in, let's do our weekly recap. Erin, what's going on in your life?
Hello. We're filming on a Saturday today, which we never do. We always film on the weekdays. But for whatever reason, we decided to film on Saturday morning, which is so different, but it's kind of fun. We get to like catch up. So I guess for my weekly recap, we went out last night. It was the Pirates home opener. And the Pirates home opener, I guess, is like a big day in Pittsburgh. They are, always start at 4:12 in the afternoon for the first game of the year, because the area code for Pittsburgh is 412. So 412 is like so cute. Here. So we went out literally at like 3:30, and we were out until I think 11, which is so long. It sounds like such a long time, but we had such a good time just like there with my friends. There were so many people out and about, but it was not a nice day for a baseball game at all. It was literally snowing. So we just decided to stay in the bars because literally we were like watching the game on TV and it would be snowing and then it would be sunny and then it would be snowing. So I was like, no, we are absolutely not going to the game. We're just gonna like stay in the bar. But we had such a good time. I did a really good job of staying pretty sober because I knew we needed to film this today. And I was like, I cannot film this podcast episode hungover at all. So I stuck to beer all night, which like I'm not that big of a beer girl. But because I'm not that big of a beer girl, I drink it really slow. And then so I probably had like, I was trying to do the math last night and I was like, okay, I probably had like 6 beers in total, but I think I only drank the first like 2/3 of each one because then it would get warm and someone would hand me another one. Oh. And then I would just like put the like 1/3 of the warm one just down. So I probably only had like 4 beers the entire time and it was great.
Oh my God. I had like a tongue dip of beer one time and I was like, never again. Like,
okay, so I'm more of a beer girl than that.
Yeah, no, I don't know what it is, because I feel like some people are like, oh my God, it's so good. And I feel like if you drink, I feel like there's like one type of alcohol or a couple types of alcohol that just something about it scarred you a little bit that you're like, never again, like I just can't go back. You know, and I feel like it's not even like I actually had a real sip. I'm just like,
Like, and beer does give it like keg in like a frat basement. Yes, it does give that a little bit.
Yeah, and so I will say, really,
I never actually drank beer out of a keg in college ever in my life. I'd never have. But I do like it. I mean, it's okay. But I just feel like I knew I was going to be out for so long that, and I didn't want to get drunk. I was like, I want to stay sober today. So if I started with liquor, I just felt like that was going to be a bad like spiral down. And I don't like White Claws anymore for some reason, or like seltzers or anything. I just don't like them. So I was like, I'll just drink beer. And literally by 9 o'clock, we went to a different bar that wasn't so packed because we were so hungry and we were sitting there eating like nachos for the last 2 hours. So it was like honestly great. And then my friends came over and had a sleepover, which was so fun. We like love doing that now. I don't know
why. That's so cute.
I know. So no, it was me and my two friends and Bella all in my king size bed and we had a sleepover.
I saw your video Erin posted a video on her story today of Bella like jumping into the bed and like swatting at one of your friends in the bed. Like Bella was like, wake up. Yeah. And you know, play give with me attention. Yeah. Like this.
No,
is
she was
ridiculous.
Sleeping on like she was sleeping on top of me at one point, and then she was sleeping like on top of one of my friends. It was so funny. They're like, is this what you do every day? I was like, honestly, yeah. But I am getting really sad because my one friend that was here, she's moving away in 3 weeks. She's moving to Chicago. And literally this time last year, there were 8 of us. And now after she moves, there will be 3 left. Aww. Literally everyone's moving away and it makes me so sad.
It's so hard because I feel like especially in your 20s, like you get to a point where that I feel like that starts to happen or people just disperse. Because lately one of my friends, so I live in Massachusetts and one of my friends just moved like 45 minutes away from my hometown she moved in with her boyfriend and now she lives like 45 minutes from me where I live in my new place. And then one of my friends just signed a lease on an apartment in Rhode Island, like down on the coast. And that's going to be an hour and a half away from where I live. And like him and I literally go out to dinner once a week. Like we are regulars at the same restaurant to the point where when we walk in and have a reservation, they don't even have to ask our name. Like they know what drinks we're going to get. It's just like, we are always there and we see each other at least once a week. So I'm like, oh, that's going to be so different, like being and we're not, it's not even like we're across the country, we're just like an hour and a half away from each other, but there
and
is
sometimes
just like
that's hard too, like if you're only an hour and a half away, you're not gonna like make a weekend trip down there to go see him. Like I go see some of my friends that live out of state and I'll go for the entire weekend because it's kind of like a vacation, but being an hour and a half, that's like a weird kind of distance.
I feel like when you when you move away from friends, you have to be, it just takes so much more effort and you have to be so intentional about genuinely keeping up with those friendships. Like I have a friend who lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and I have a friend who lives in Connecticut, and my friends are kind of like dispersed a little bit from college, and I really have to be like intentional about texting them being like, hey, how are you doing? Or even just like sending them an Instagram post that made me think of them or that I think that they would think is funny or anything like that. You like really have to be intentional. I will say my friend that just is moving like an hour and a half away, we both really love to travel, and we went on a trip to California together in December, and we both agreed that like it was just so good to travel together. Like we, you know, like sometimes where even you're spending like so much time in close quarters with someone that sometimes it's like, okay, I love you dearly, but this friendship has a three day max on a trip, you know, like it's like, okay, I love you, but I can't do this for a long period of time. Him and I were like totally fine the whole trip, like just both like very like go with the flow when it came to like, you know, what we were going to do with our days. And like, it was just very relaxing. So we've talked already about going on several other trips together. We're going to Aruba together in June. So he invited me on his family vacation. I'm like so excited, but
I
feel like
so
you
much.
Definitely have to be really intentional when your friends move away.
Yeah. I feel like you have dinner friends, you have going out friends, and then you have travel friends. Mm-hmm. My one best friend, she has been like my best friend since college, and I don't see her, despite her still living in Pittsburgh. She's one of the three. I don't see her very often because she's just like super busy with work, and like she has her own life, her own routines, like a very disciplined kind of like routine oriented person. But we always travel together and we have the best time traveling together. Like she's my, like if I'm taking a trip, I want to go with her. So you do have like those friends that like are just there for different reasons. But I like keeping up with friends via audio message. This is something that Grace and I actually do because we don't live in the same city. We literally send audio messages back and forth all day, every day. And I posted about this on my TikTok, how like audio messages are such a great way to keep up with friends. And so many people were like, oh, you're the annoying friend that's always sending like the audio message and stuff. And I'm like, no, my friends love them. They're like, we never actually listen to audio messages. No one's listening to them. I'm like, my friends.
I listen to it like it's a podcast. I have a friend that I literally, him and I will send like 10-minute voice notes back and forth to each other. And I will literally, I'll put it on. I'll be like doing my dishes. I'm like, yep. Like really engaged, like listening, you know, I just listen to it like it's a podcast.
Yeah. Like, and then you like pause it halfway through. You respond to the first half and then you continue listening. And then you respond to the second.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. I mean, I have friends that I like, my friends that live close by, I don't really do the audio messages with, but all my friends that live further away, we send audio messages literally all day, every day. That's crazy. Yeah. Some people think it's annoying. Wow. Damn.
I know.
They would not like me because I'm a yapper and I also send audio messages. So you're going to hear about my day and you're going to hear every single detail.
That's why we get along so well. But anyway, what is going on in your week?
This has been an eventful week, I will say. The last like 7 days have been a little crazy. Last Friday, I went and got my color analysis done, which I mentioned in the last podcast episode or a previous one, and I told y'all I would update you. And it was honestly, it was so good. Like I went to a woman named Anna Harris in Fall River, Massachusetts, and she was just, I mean, she's like the sweetest thing. But it was just very fascinating to just like, I don't know, she looked at like my contrast level. She looked at, you know, my different, like the best hair colors for me, the, you know, what seasonal color palette I was, and, you know, whether I would look good in bright colors or soft colors or medium tone colors. And she gave me like all sorts of ideas for like the best like blush colors and nail colors and lipstick colors and eyeshadow colors. And like, she just gave me so much information, and it was fascinating because I think I mentioned it. I don't know if I mentioned it the last time I talked about it or not, but Erin and I went to an event in February. It was like a brand event, and I showed up in like an outfit, and I just felt like so insecure in my outfit and how I looked. Like I did not feel like, oh, I love this outfit and I love how it makes me feel and I feel like it's so flattering. And like, I just did not feel confident. And we were surrounded by so many like really talented people. And I so badly wanted to just have that energy of just feeling so confident. Like, I'm going to go up and talk to that person. But when you're thinking about your appearance and you're like feeling insecure and you're just like, you're feeling that way, it is so hard to embody that energy and put yourself out there. And like, these were people that are like, you know, like editor at Vogue level, like, you know, like really, really talented people. And it's such an incredible opportunity to network. And I just felt so sad that I like missed out on that because of my insecurity around how I looked and how I was presenting myself. And that's why like I was like, I'm going to just get this freaking color analysis and redo my whole closet and really make it things I'm excited to wear. And now that I know what colors look best on me and I've seen it in person, right? Like, it's so fascinating. I posted a video with this clip where she did like warm tone colors versus cool tone colors. And the warm tone colors make my face look so like bright and energized. And then cool tone colors literally suck the life out of me. Like, my under eye bags look so much like darker and I just look pale and like, yeah, just like the life was sucked out of my face. And it's crazy because I didn't really notice like, it's so hard to notice that difference until you're really sitting in front of a mirror with like a warm tone, you know, green and a cool tone green, and you're trying to figure out like what looks better. So I feel like it's been really helpful to take some of the weight off of like, okay, now when I go shopping, I know at least one thing that is going to help me make it a lot easier. And now I'm going to kind of like play around with figuring out like what my body shape is and what clothing flatters like my body shape best. And, you know, just like that type of thing. I don't know. It's been very fascinating and I feel very empowered to like actually create outfits I enjoy. So it's been really exciting. It's like the, what do you call it? The highlight, I feel like, of the week.
Yeah. I'm so excited for you. What did she say about your hair color?
So she actually said my hair color is pretty much like perfect. Like, it's like the ideal color for me, which my hair color is pretty much my natural color at this point. I got a gloss on it a couple months ago, but the gloss is like washed off. So it's pretty much my natural, which is really nice. She said that if I did ever want to change it, I shouldn't go too light. And I could go more warm tone. So I could go for like a copper red is what she said, which would be fun. I feel like to try. I know red is really hard to keep up with, but I don't know if I would like it on myself. I feel like it might kind of overpower my features. Like, I feel like if you look at me, you might just see my hair because my eyebrows are dark brown. So
yeah, I mean, you could go like warmer and more copper without going red.
Yeah, without going.
And I feel like for summer that could be really pretty, like with the sun shining.
It could. Well, my natural hair has little like blonde highlights and actually little red highlights in it. So in some lights, like when I would be out in the sunshine, like direct sunlight when I was a kid, sometimes my hair would look like really bright red because it would pull on all those red pieces. So it's kind of cool. I don't know. I have to think about how I want to, like if I want to integrate some of the red in, or I don't know. It just gives me so many options, but it makes it so fun. You know, like I felt like I was looking at my closet before. I was so frustrated. And now I'm like, okay, this is actually really exciting because now it's kind of funny. She gave me this sheet that says like my best colors and my worst colors. And what's hilarious is that one of my worst colors is the hot pink that I'm wearing in the podcast cover. And two of my other worst colors are very, very light pastel blue and very, very light pastel purple. Well, I've had this blue shirt that I've held on to because I feel bad because I've only worn it a couple times, but I hate how it looks on me because it's that pastel blue color. So I'm like, great, now I have permission to get rid of this. And I also have a bathing suit that I've only worn once and it's like a pastel purple. And I'm like, great, now I have permission to get rid of this as well. Like, something about doing this just gave me permission to be like, okay, I'm not actually being overly critical of myself. This color does just look like trash and it's not doing me any favors. So I'm going to get rid of it. So I'm excited. I'm going to go through my closet today and get rid of more stuff.
Yeah, I'm like on a mission to bring more color into my wardrobe too, because I love bright colors, but I want to get my color analysis done because I just went back to my natural hair color as well. And I feel like the blonde almost washed me out to the point of a lot of colors not looking good on me. But now that I have my natural hair color, I've noticed when I do put color on, I really like it. But I feel like there are definitely colors that are better than others. So, but I did some research and I like can't find a color analysis person in Pittsburgh. So I'm going to New York pretty soon and I want to maybe do it when I'm there. That could be fun.
Yeah. I will say the woman that I went to see I mean, I lucked out that she was absolutely incredible, but she was also like the only one up here, you know, that she's so good what she does. There are people who do it virtually, but I feel like seeing the actual drapes draped over you in person, like nothing tops that. So
yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah, it really is. The other thing that happened this week, which I talked about a little bit on my Instagram, my family lost someone who was kind of like close to our family and one of my dad's best friends growing up. And I've talked about it on my TikTok really openly that losing people I love is like my biggest fear, and it like eats me alive. And the like kind of flip side of this, and like the, I don't know, the good thing is I've been feeling so grateful this week that I have a career that allows me the flexibility to just take time off if I need it, or, you know, work on the weekend if I want to, and I don't have to like ask anyone for permission, and I also don't lose any money by doing that. And yesterday, yesterday from the day that we're filming this, was my dad's birthday, his 67th birthday, and I just like took the whole day off pretty much. Like I just cleared my calendar. I just moved my work around to do it on other days, and I got to take him to breakfast, and just like spending that time with him was so nice, and doing something nice for him, and yeah, just kind of like treating him. I don't know. It was just nice to have that quality time. And amidst a week where it's been pretty low vibe, pretty sad vibes, like it was just such a, it was another like point of light, because I don't know. 2 years ago when I like started my business, or 2.5 years ago, I remember I was making like $2,000 a month and I was working 70 hours a week, and there's just no room to take any time off because I was like, I'm already not making enough to like, you know, really get by. And I started my business for this exact reason. I decided not to pursue being a human rights lawyer because I wanted a career that gave me time and location freedom. So 2.5 years later, to be in this spot where like I get to have those moments of just like really basking in that time freedom and the location freedom, it's just like, it makes me feel so grateful. Like I've been very, yeah, like the past like couple of days, I've just been feeling very, very grateful that I have that option, and grateful that I love my past self like followed through and stuck with it, you know?
Yeah. And I love that you're giving yourself the permission to take advantage of the flexibility, because this is definitely something that I struggle with. You know, for the first kind of like 6 months of being totally self-employed, if I wasn't sitting at my computer from like 8 to 4, 8 to 5, I would get really hard on myself. But sometimes when you work in a creative field, if you're feeling like you're not being super productive, taking a little bit of a break, like going for a walk or going out to lunch, or, you know, it's like, okay, maybe this afternoon I like change my location and go work at a coffee shop just to kind of get out of the house. Like you can take advantage of the flexibility, but it wasn't something that I have been inherently good at. So I like that you're kind of giving yourself the permission.
I like have realized that too, where it's like in a 9 to 5, like you have to be on. And so part of being self-employed is the fact that you don't want to have to be on at all times. But that does mean that sometimes you have to work a slightly off hours if you want to take time to go to lunch in the middle of the day. But it's like, that's the whole freaking point of why you did it. You know? Like,
yeah.
The whole, that's like the benefit. Like enjoy that, because it's not always going to be like, I recognize that someday down the line when I have kids and my kids are on a schedule and I'm picking my kids up from school and I'm taking care of them after school, whatever, I probably am going to have to work a little bit more traditional hours. So I'm like, enjoy it right now and bask in it, and like go spend time with your dad, go spend time with your mom, go spend time with your friends. Like, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like a lot of times entrepreneurs do kind of like fall back into the typical routine, but it is nice to step out of it and be like, wait, like I can go pick up a volunteer shift midday or go grocery shopping at 10 a.m. because like my job allows me to do that. And like,
especially if you find that you are more productive in those off hours, you know, like sometimes I get really productive randomly right before bed when I'm like laying in bed with my computer and I'm like feeling very creative, because again, it's like a creative field. So your energy really needs to be in it. But if you get like a mid afternoon slump and you can go to the gym at 4 p.m. and then come back to it later after you eat dinner, like that's perfect. So yeah, it's just kind of like figuring out what works best for you and taking advantage of the fact that you can be flexible. And again, that's why you got into this career to begin with, because you wanted that. So now you're able to take advantage of it.
Right. Exactly. But is there anything else going on in your week?
No, I don't think so. I think we can get right into the episode. Like Grace said in the intro, this episode is going to be money advice we'd give our 18-year-old selves, which I love this topic so much. I feel like I post about this a lot on my social media, and I know you have too, kind of doing the series like money advice I'd give my 18-year-old self. And this isn't only for 18-year-olds. I think it just kind of goes back to the like something you wish you knew when you were younger, no matter what age you are. You know, if you're 30 and you wish you knew this at 25, like it's all still applicable. But it's kind of just like good to frame it as this is something that I wish that I knew when I was younger. And we'll just kind of go back and forth. Grace and I each like made our own lists of things. We'll go back and forth kind of like saying our money advice that we would give our younger self. So do you want to go first with your piece of money advice?
Sure. Also, what's interesting is I was looking at Erin's list before this, and our advice is so different. Like Erin's are more like actionable and mine are more like on the emotional side of money. So I feel like, I don't know, it's a good balance of things. Yeah. I feel like that we would tell our younger selves. So the first thing that I said was learn to invest early and be okay with the potential risk. When I started working when I was like 15 or 16, I think, at a McDonald's. And then I worked at a shoe store, and then I had a job in college, but all right, three jobs in college actually, but I was only making like 10 bucks an hour because that was a minimum wage at the time. And after taxes, like I really didn't have a lot to work with. And so I got into this kind of habit of hoarding everything and just like holding on to everything and saving every penny. And while that's great, if I had been more familiar with investing at a younger age, I think it would have helped me just like invest more and obviously build wealth, but I think it would have helped my like confidence about my finances. But I was so scared of losing my money or like not holding on to all of it that was why investing kind of, I think, scared me, because there is potential risk with every investment, right? But I think I wish that I, or not, I don't regret it obviously, but I wish that I, you know, was a bit more comfortable with risk at a younger age, or at least like educated myself on risk. Mm-hmm. Because that prevented me from taking some actions that I think could have led to having more money, but also like just being more financially educated at a younger age.
Yeah, I think the investment piece, the education that you said, is the most important part here, because it's easy to say like, okay, like maybe at 18 you have a job that you could have access to like a 401k or something, like let's just say, or maybe you're 20 and you get a job that has access to a 401k. You are investing because it's taking a little bit of money out of your paycheck every month and putting it into an investment account. If you don't have access to that, you have to do it on your own, but it's still the same premises. You're putting a little bit of money aside every paycheck, every month, every time you get paid, whatever. But I think the big piece here is making sure you are educating yourself on what does it mean when we say like investing risk? Like what risk are you truly taking? If you don't actually understand that and you don't actually understand the stock market fundamentals, it's going to be really hard to stay motivated for one, but two, it's going to be really hard to not pay attention to the volatility that happens in the stock market, because then you're just going to pull all of your money out when you see the stock market's declining and things like that.
And I think, so I'm 25 now, and so I guess it depends on how old like your parents are, but one thing I find like interesting about it is that I think it's the 401k was only really came out and started becoming popular like kind of, I think, when our parents were at like their midlife. Like it hasn't been around for that long. And so what I knew about investing at that point was that, not that it's a gamble, but that there's always a potential you're going to lose your money. And obviously that is true, right? Like there is always a potential that you will look into your investment account today and not have as much in there as you did yesterday. Like, right. But more often than not, it's going to grow and you're actually going to have more. Mm-hmm. But so I think a lot of, you know, my parents and people in my parents' kind of age demographic at the time when I was around 18, I think because of the market fluctuations they had lived through before and the idea that investing and having like a 401k or something was just simply not like they never talked about that in school. Like it was, you know, they were kind of navigating it on their own. There was just a lot that was unknown and it wasn't talked about as much as other financial things were. Like we talked about credit at my house. We talked about saving, you know, my parents talked to me about you know, the benefit of maybe using cash versus credit, or why they use cash over credit, or why they use credit over cash, or, you know, things like that, right? But the investing portion of it was just not talked about. And so in my mind at 18, I was like, okay, well, if I invest money, I could potentially lose it. So I'm better off if I just hold on to it rather than thinking about the long-term kind of growth of it. So I think that that's kind of, just realizing how it hasn't really been talked about too. I think I could have definitely, or should have, you know, looked into it more and just understood it better.
That is such a good point. The generational differences are so prevalent. Mm-hmm. If you think about why we didn't learn about investing growing up, mm-hmm. the people who would have taught us would have been our parents or our teachers slash kind of like professors in college. And they are in that generation where they had a pension, like their pension is going to cover them. They have Social Security. Maybe they have a little bit of a 401k, but it's supplemented by Social Security and their pension and things like that. Also, think about how our parents would have had to invest outside of a 401k, a pension, anything like that. They would have literally had to like find a stockbroker, call him on the phone to place an investment. Like that's how it used to work. Index funds, ETFs, like these are all relatively new concepts, apps that you can like pull up an app on your phone and just purchase a stock or purchase an ETF. That is new. That is like very, very new. So it's kind of obvious when you think about it like that, that they didn't teach us about this because they didn't have it.
Right. And when you think about too, I mean, my dad just retired in December. My mom is not retired yet. So it's like, I could see from their perspective, it's like, well, I don't want to teach somebody how to invest for retirement when I haven't actually retired yet. So I don't even know if I did the right thing, right? Like, I don't want to, you know, say the wrong thing. And I think too about social media, like, yes, social media was popular when I was 18. We were using, but I don't know if TikTok was around. And if so, it was really just like a dance app at that point. But the options for learning were just a lot different. And I don't know, I think at least when I was in high school, when I was around 18, like we were beginning to see some financial education kind of be integrated into curriculum. I know my high school, we had some financial education, but my high school was like ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, a lot of other schools just didn't have any financial education, but it just wasn't talked about as much. So I don't regret it. I don't like fault my 18-year-old self for not like investing sooner. I started investing when I was like 22 or 21 maybe. So I'm fine, right? All's well in the world. But I think if you're listening to this and you are younger, or even if you aren't younger and you're maybe just not as confident in your investing abilities, like take the time to just actually go like teach yourself and learn about it. We'll link some resources in the show notes, but yeah, take the time to go learn about it because it can be a huge game changer in your finances.
Definitely. Okay. So my first one on my list is that getting a degree doesn't guarantee you a job. And I feel like this is something that I always knew. It's definitely not like advice I'd give my 18-year-old self, but like to 18-year-olds to like college age kids, right? I feel like this is something that I always knew because I had the privilege of having parents that like really hounded this into me. Like, you just because you're going to college, like you need to work really hard to make sure that you're not going to graduate from college and have a degree that's kind of a waste because you can't find a job. So they really pushed me to kind of seek out like internships and things like that. I also was really like hell bent on seeking out internships because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my degree. I was a business major. I studied finance and economics. And, you know, my nursing friends, they knew they were going to go be a nurse. And my engineering friends, they knew they were going to be an engineer. But I was a business major and I wasn't going to be an economist studying economics. So I was like, okay, I need to like go get some internships and try out a bunch of different things so that I can kind of see what I want to do when I graduate. So when I left college, I had 5 internships under my belt, literally 5. And it's because I did some in the summer, I did some during the school year, like different things like that. So I got to try out a ton of different things, but 2 of those led to full-time job offers. So that's kind of like how you get your foot in the door at companies. But a lot of kids don't think that way because maybe they didn't have parents that kind of like taught them that or whatever the reason may be. They graduate from college saying, I have a degree, so why can't I find a job? I just saw a TikTok video on this last week, and that's kind of what prompted me and like reminded me about this. The girl was saying that she graduated from college with 2 degrees, like she dual majored, and she had like a certificate or something, and she's applied to hundreds of jobs, and the only response that she's got on LinkedIn was someone asking her if she would take a customer service position. And she was essentially saying in the TikTok, like, no, I wouldn't take a customer service position. Like, I'm definitely more qualified than that. And I was reading through all the comments and people were saying like, no, you're probably not, because you have no experience, like none. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely the benefit of in college, you need to get some experience under your belt. And then that's how you get a job after college.
Yeah, I have 2 thoughts on this. One, so I actually knew someone, this was an ex, we'll be honest, it's an ex, who went to graduate with an engineering degree. And like, I remember helping him work on his resume, and there was literally like nothing on there. Like, and he, you know, he had been quote unquote in some, you know, different clubs and organizations, but I was like, describe your level of involvement. But the thing is he would just go to meetings just enough to like maintain his membership, and he would sleep. He would literally put his head down and like sleep in these meetings and then leave. And, you know, he was getting frustrated about not finding a job. And I was like, you're competing against engineering students who've had, 5 internships, or who were head of some club, or who started a club on campus, or volunteered in some sort of engineering nonprofit, or like you know, especially if you're graduating from a really great program, you have to remember you're graduating at the same exact time as hundreds of other engineering students who are looking for jobs in the exact same friggin' market that you're looking for a job in. So you have to think about the fact that, your resume is going to end up against all of these other geniuses in your program. Like, you all are smart. You're all graduating the same degree. Like, what's going to make your resume stand out? The other thing I'll say is that, and I realized this when I was in college, but I think part of the reason why is because I was going out of state. I was going to a very expensive school. However, the major and like what I wanted to do, there were no other public universities in all of New England that really offered this. So it was kind of like my option. And I had no idea like what amount of debt I was getting into when I was younger. Like, I just couldn't conceptualize what it looked like, to be honest. But like, getting a college degree is such a privilege. And I know some people, when you say the P word, people are like, but I worked for this. Okay. There are 2 types of privilege: earned privilege and unearned privilege. Unearned privilege are things that you didn't have to do anything for, like being white or like whatever. Being earned privilege are things that you have had to earn, right? So even if you paid your entire way through college, getting a college degree is still a privilege. It is an earned privilege. It's something you worked for, but it is still a privilege. There are so many people who never even have the opportunity to step foot on a college campus or to take one singular college class. And I don't think that a lot of people going into college, a lot of 18-year-olds, realize that if you are able to go get a college degree, like, you're probably never going to have that opportunity again in the rest of your life unless you go to a graduate program. So make the absolute most of those 4 years. Like, go to the Career Development Center, go to office hours, talk to professors, like actually like use the resources that are there for you. Because what I saw happen so much with not just people that I knew, but I was an RA in college, so I would have residents who were going to graduate and they would, you know, be working on their job applications in the lounge, or they'd be talking to me about applying for jobs and things. What happens so often is people get all the way to graduation time and then they're going to apply for jobs and they look at their resume and they're like, wait, I actually didn't even do anything with this degree. They're like, hold on. Like, or I, you know, I'm looking at other people's resumes and realizing that they've got 12 different extracurriculars over the last 4 years. I've got one. Or, you know, I went to these meetings, but I didn't actually create any sort of impact. I didn't actually do anything. So it's like, if you have the privilege to receive a college degree, again, whether that is, you know, whether you worked for it and you're paying your way through, or your parents are paying, whatever it is, if you have the privilege to be getting a college degree, like, take it seriously, because you're so right. Like, your degree does not guarantee you a job. It does not. There are thousands of students competing for the exact same jobs that you are. And if you want them and you want good ones, like if you don't want to be a customer service rep because you think that's below you, then like, you know, then like, yeah. you got yeah
you gotta, you gotta work have so other that stuff. It is below you. Yeah, 100%. Yes, I think we've actually talked about the whole ex thing, because I had the same experience. My ex, senior year of college, it was 2 months before, actually it was a month before we graduated. I already had my full-time job offer lined up. I had like 2 full-time job offers and I got to pick between the two. I was going into what I thought was my dream job, super excited about it. It was a month before we graduated. And this man was like, can you send me your resume? Because I need to make mine. So I sent him my resume. He has none. He's like using my resume to create his. I think he just like erased my information and put his. And then he was like, wait, I have nothing to put on this. He was a management major, no internship experience. All he did was he played club hockey at my university, and that was like it. And so now he works for, I mean, he works for his parents' company, so like he's totally fine, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to get into like, I think he said he wanted to get into medical device sales. I was like, how are you gonna do that?
Like, honey, please. Like, please, everyone wants to be in medical device sales because you make a crap ton of money. They're not hiring you off the club hockey team. You know what I mean? Like, I just, yeah, I, it's funny, which this is a whole other situation, but the fact that we both were, remained in those relationships is really crazy. But yeah, it's just, you can't, there's some element in college where you can kind of just like fly by the seat of your pants. But then I do just see so many people get all the way to senior year where they're like, oh crap, you know? And then the thing is that they start joining all sorts of clubs and things their senior year, but then they're like, well, I just want to enjoy my senior year, it's my last year, I want to go have fun and like go to the bars with my friends. And I'm like, honey, you had 3 years to do, you know, like that 3 years, this isn't 3 weeks, like you had a long time, you know. And this isn't to say like, if you already graduated, like for people who are listening, if you already graduated and maybe you didn't have as much in your resume or like whatever, that's fine, right? Like, you can't go back in time, so like don't beat yourself up type thing. But also, if you are an adult now, there are still like adult things that you can join and do. Like, there are still like organizations for grown adults and things now that you can use to enhance your resume if you are like in the recent grad kind of population like we are, and you don't feel like your resume really is doing much for you because you don't have a lot of like experience elsewhere. So
definitely,
yeah, definitely important to think about, especially when you're getting like a $200,000 degree. Like, I did, like, come on now, guys. Like, Jesus.
Okay, what's the next thing on your list?
Okay, the next thing on my list is, it's okay to prioritize money in the career that you choose. This is advice I would give myself because I went into college. So I went into college actually as a business management major, and I planned to eventually go to grad school to get a nonprofit management grad degree because my long-term goal was to own my own nonprofit. And that sounds really well and good, right? But, you know, just a little charitable woman, little 17-year-old me who's like, I just want to make a difference. And I still do, right? That's part of my core like values, is like making a difference and leaving this earth a better place than when I got here. But I changed my major to urban studies after one semester simply because I took microeconomics and I was like, I never want to do that again. It was so bad. And they said we had to take accounting. And I was like, oh, guys. I was like, no, I'm like, you know what? I'm tapping out. So I changed my major. And I also wanted to learn more about people. Changed my major to urban studies. And then I got to do some research with a professor my freshman year of college, which was obviously a very unique opportunity. And we were working with the exact population of people that I eventually wanted to serve. And I realized, you know, the building that this was in, right? And the cubicle that the nonprofit director was working in. And just like, it was, I mean, it was like a pretty rundown building and it was loud and there were like people everywhere, and the population, there was a lot of people who were struggling with drug addiction and mental illness, and that led to lots of like erratic behavior, and just, it was so stressful. And I was, all I was doing in my role was asking them survey questions, and I was like, can I work in this environment day in and day out? But then I felt this, you know, I started doing some more research, and I realized too that when I graduated, I was probably going to be looking at around $30,000 to $35,000 a year as a salary, as like a entry level, like nonprofit worker. And then I thought too, like, what is actually the emotional toll that that's taking on me and the stress? Like, I'm paying all this money for this degree, and then I'm going to go into a career that like, I feel stressed every day and I'm overworked and I'm underpaid. But I felt this guilt because I have always been someone who just really, really cares about making an impact on others and, you know, serving people and volunteering and things like that. I felt this guilt for the financial side of this decision. And I was like, well, no, okay. I'm like, so I felt like I was trying to justify that the emotional toll was going to be too much and just like not pay attention to the money side, because it sounds so charitable and whatever to be like, yeah, you know, I only make $35,000 a year. I'm barely scraping by, you know, I'm eating rice and beans and that's all I can afford. But you know what? I'm for the people. Like, and I was just like, Grace, I had this moment where I'm like, no, like,
yeah,
you have to think about the actual life that you want to live. And around when I came to this realization is when I had declared a double major in human rights and a minor in social justice organizing. I thought, okay, I'll be a human rights lawyer. You know, I'll still get to serve people and help people seek justice, but also, you know, I'll get paid a little bit more. But then I was like, the emotional toll of that is so heavy, you know, because you're defending or trying to seek justice for people who've had like real intense, like, you know, wrongdoings happen to them. And it's like, you're going home and you're trying to just like not think about someone who was just hate crimes. Like, it's like, that's, you can't just turn that off, you know? So I realized towards the end of my college career, which was what, in, you know, kind of sparked me graduating and then starting a business, was that I thought about the actual life I wanted to live. Like, I was like, what does my dream day to day look like? I have time freedom. I have location freedom. I'm making a lot of money. You know, I am able to spend a lot of time with my future kids. I'm able to spend a lot of time with my future spouse. I'm able to go volunteer when I want and just do whatever I want, whenever I want, and make a lot of money. And I was like, neither of these career options that I've had are going to afford me that. But I had to give myself permission to realize that like money is actually, it is very important. And you can love a career and love serving people or whatever, teaching, whatever it is. You can love that so much. And you can choose to prioritize your financial happiness and the wealth that you're able to build more. And I mean, I do not regret leaving behind that career whatsoever. I love what I do now. And I realized that there are still a million and one ways I get to serve people every day. I get to, all the stuff I get to do online, I get to show people how I'm working on my confidence, how I'm working through insecurities, how I'm building a business. I get to help them do all those things too. And I get to, like, I'm serving people doing that. I'm helping other people create lives they love too. So yeah, I don't know, if you're kind of like battling between like, oh, I like this and I want to do good things, but I also know it's not going to afford me the life I want to live. You can literally, it's okay to give yourself permission to be like, yeah, the money actually does in fact matter to me.
Yeah. Well, that, you're not a bad person. There's so much to be said for putting yourself first and putting your financial success first, because in turn, throughout your lifetime, because you prioritize yourself and your money, you're going to be able to help people in such a greater way, because mm-hmm. you can in turn give back through the money that you're making. You know, as you're increasing your income, you can also increase your charity donations. You can also, mm-hmm. you have more time flexibility, so you can go volunteer. Like, you are in such a better place to serve people in a greater way when you do put yourself first. Whereas if you would have graduated from college and started working at a nonprofit, yes, you could have made an impact for sure, mm-hmm. but it probably wouldn't have been in the way that you wanted to make the impact. And you would have been limited by like the monetary constraints that you were feeling.
Exactly. And I think that there, at least when I was younger, I don't struggle with this anymore, but some people listening might have this struggle too, where it's like, you want money. And part of the reason that you want money is because, hell yeah, I want to friggin' drive a Porsche eventually. I would love to, like, you know, see something in the store and be like, yeah, I'm going to buy it and not even look at the price tag. I would love to have a beautiful house. I would love to send my kids to good schools. I would love to be able to do all those things. I want to go friggin' shake my ass in a club in Bali. Like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, of course I want to do all of that. I want money to be able to have fun. But one thing that I also has been like reassuring to me and my perspective was, we need money in the hands of good people. And I truly believe that I'm a good person and that I do good things with my money. And the more money that I have, you're right, the more I can give. I can call up a local elementary school and pay off everybody's lunch bills. I can afford to just like give people money, give really big tips when I go to restaurants. I can, you know what I mean? I don't have to worry about any of that. I can donate to nonprofits that are meaningful to me. There are people who would have all of that wealth and would keep all of it for themselves. And that's okay, right? I mean, depending on how you view it, right? But nobody needs, no one person needs millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. Like, I truly think that there's, if we can get money into the right hands, like, great, like, the world will really be a better place. And so I had to remind myself that too, of like, it's okay to want money to live my life also, but having my own wealth allows me to create way more of an impact than I could create if I was working that $35,000 a year job in a nonprofit. And so that was kind of reassuring to me too, to be like, okay, yeah, it's fine to focus on money, and you don't have to do a low paying job in the name of helping other people. There are other ways to make a massive impact and not feel financial scarcity and stress 24/7 like you would living in Massachusetts, one of the most expensive states, making $35,000 a year, you know? So
yeah. Love that. Okay. So my next one is that your paycheck from your first full-time job is not going to go as far as you think it will. I think this is prevalent no matter whether you went like the traditional college route or right out of high school, you took your first full-time job, whatever the case may be. Once you start making a significantly more amount of money or a significantly higher salary than you were making, you kind of just think that all of your problems are going to go away. So for example, my senior year of college, I probably made, I think when I was doing my taxes, I made like $25,000 that year, which is a pretty good amount of money for a college student, because I worked like so many jobs that year, just like doing a bunch of different internships and babysitting and all of the things. So I made like 25K. Well, my starting salary was 58K. So that's a large jump, right? For a 22-year-old going from 25 to 58, it's like, okay, I have a lot of money now. But with that like increase in salary, you're also, for the first time for most people, getting all of the adult expenses that come with living on your own and having a full-time job. And your salary is not automatically going to just fund your lifestyle. I think a lot of people have that misconception that, okay, well, I have a full-time job and I got a degree, so I got a good job, so my salary should just cover everything. And without even looking at the numbers, maybe they have a car payment, maybe they have student loan payments, they go and get an apartment that's like over $1,000 a month because they don't have roommates, and all of a sudden they get their first paycheck from that job and they start paying off their bills and they're like, I don't have any money left over. So I think it's just really important to, before you make all of those big decisions with where your paycheck is going to go, and by big decisions, I mean what car you're going to drive, if you're going to get roommates or not. You don't really have a say on like your student loan payments because you probably like got yourself into that by that point. But just like making sure you're thinking through that, running kind of like a fake budget with your starting salary is so, so important. Because when I graduated on my 58K salary, I had a car payment, I had student loan payments. If I would have gotten an apartment without roommates at that point in my life, I would never have been able to afford to save, invest, have any type of discretionary income whatsoever.
I think too that a lot of people don't look at what their student loan balance is or what their payment is going to be, especially when they're, you know, I don't remember what they call it, deferred or something for 6 months after you graduate, like where your payments don't start automatically. And then they kind of base their life off of their income. And they're like, wait a second, I have a $700 loan payment. What do you mean? And they're like, that's outrageous. Screw, like, you know, insert, you know, private student loan company name. They're like, screw Sally Mae, screw whatever. My payments are so high. I'm like, sweetheart, is it frustrating? Yes. But like, you signed the contract, you did. And I'm saying this as somebody who graduated with $70,000 of student loan debt. Like, you know, I had a lot too, you know, but it's like, you really do have to think about that. And you have to think about the long term too, of like, if you want to get out of debt early, or you want to pay off your car loan early, or if you don't want to have roommates in 2 years, like, how are you allocating your money right now when you graduate? Because you might realize that based on all of your expenses and your starting salary, you probably will have roommates for longer than 2 years, you know, because you can't afford to do all of it at once. So it is really important. I do think running that like mock budget is such a game changer. I've done that a lot when I am kind of like playing around with scenarios. Like when I wanted to move out, I was like, okay, here's how much I want to make comfortably a month to be able to afford a nice apartment in Massachusetts. And running that mock budget is so helpful. I had no idea what I was going to make when I graduated because I started a business. So I knew I was going to be, and I was doing Instacart at the same time. So there was no guaranteed income, and I knew I was going to be very broke, and I was living at my parents' house. But like, if you are getting, like, if you do have like a set salary, run the numbers, because I don't know, having a mock budget just really is like very refreshing.
The student loan payments are a big kicker. And do I think that student loans are definitely a little bit predatory, like giving an 18-year-old access to basically a blank check and you can fund literally anything for 4 whole years off of student loans, like going to the bars and everything like that can literally be funded by student loans for 4 years. Do I think that's a little predatory? Yes, but that's why it's money advice we'd give our 18-year-old selves, because if you do know this information at 18, you can kind of get ahead of it and not end up in a $100,000 to $200,000 hole when you are 22 years old. But what's the next thing on your list?
So, well, this is the, no, this isn't the next one, but it's the last one on my list. So I'm going to jump ahead and then we'll jump back to the other one, because this is connected to what we were just talking about. But one of my things that I would have told myself is run the numbers on your debt before considering if it's worth it. So I went to the University of Connecticut and I had one really tiny scholarship. I didn't actually know I had it. It just showed up on my fee bill 1 year. And I was like, hey, I'm not going to say anything. I just kept my mouth shut and I will let them just give me that scholarship.
Love when that happens.
It was like $8,000. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to be quiet. I was going into it with no scholarship really. And I was going out of state. And while I did end up declaring a major that was part of a regional tuition program, which meant that I was able to get in-state tuition for my second half of my junior year and my senior year, I also was an RA my sophomore, junior, and senior year. So that gave me free housing. So that knocked a whole chunk off. And then I also got payment on top of that. It was still incredibly expensive. And when all was said and done, I graduated with around $70,000 of student loan debt. And when I was applying to UConn, and it's so tricky, right? Like, I don't regret this at all, but both my parents were not able to go to colleges they really wanted to go to. My dad got into really incredible schools like WPI, MIT, kind of like level schools. I'm pretty sure he went to both of those, like a semester each, which are both very, very good engineering, like STEM colleges in Massachusetts, if you're unfamiliar. But his, you know, he had to unfortunately withdraw from school due to financial reasons and went and got an associate's degree in a career that he didn't actually want to study. And that meant that he worked a job his whole life in, you know, a career in a field that it wasn't necessarily what he was most passionate about. He had other interests he wanted to explore, but then all of a sudden you become a dad and a homeowner and all these things, and you don't want to take that risk and go back to school. And my mom, she paid for school herself, completely herself. And she worked 4 jobs her entire way through college to be able to afford it. And both my parents, they never wanted that to be the experience my brother and I had. They were like, we want you guys to go where you want to go. We don't want you to go somewhere that you hate simply to save some money and then hate your college experience. And we want you to go somewhere, you know, that it's actually a good program and that you feel like the degree was really worth it. So my brother got into his dream school. And so he went there, and it's a like private institution, is very expensive. And I went to University of Connecticut. And so I'm grateful that my parents kind of had that perspective, because I didn't like any of the other schools that I was accepted into and toured. I just didn't like any of them. And so with that in mind, right, like graduating with 70K, like I'm so glad I got that opportunity and, you know, everything. However, my parents didn't really keep me in the loop on a lot of the loan information because they didn't want me to worry about it. They wanted me to just enjoy my college experience, because my parents, they did help. They did pay for a small portion of college. I feel like I always have to like put this disclaimer, but it wasn't coming out of my parents' pocket. We had a family member who passed. We had no idea that we were in the will, and there was money that was sent over. And my parents used that towards my education. I feel like I also have to disclaim that, because I feel like people, it's not like I'm just sitting on a stack of daddy's money and he just paid my college degree. Like, I lost a family member. It was a tragic situation. But it ultimately led to me being in less debt. But my parents have, like, when they can, you know, my mom is paid like my minimum monthly payment, so I can put extra money onto my debt. Like, they really didn't want us to have to worry about it. However, $70,000 of student loan debt was a little bit alarming too when I did the math and graduated. And I was starting a business, and again, I was broke. I was like, oh, okay. this is really cute. And I've paid off $55,000 in the last 2.5 years. I've busted my freaking booty, just shoving every single extra dollar onto my debt that I can. However, if I could have graduated with less, that would have been really great. And had I known the impact of like throwing extra payments onto my debt while I was in college, I would have done that. I had 3 jobs. Like I had a little bit of extra that I could have done $200 a month or something onto my debt to help chip away at it a bit earlier. So before you sign a loan, and this, you know, I think people look at the loan amount and they're like, oh yeah, $20,000 isn't bad, or like, whatever, it's not that bad. I'm going to make $75,000 a year when I graduate. So 50K in debt is not bad. I could probably pay it off in a year. Wrong. You know, that's not the reality. And I think that's it. It makes sense again, when you're 18 and you're signing something like this. But what I recommend doing, and what I wish I did, was just Google like student loan calculator and put in your balance and your interest rate and the time you have to pay it off, because that'll tell you what your exact, you know, monthly payment will be. And then look at the average starting salary in the field that you think you want to go into, and like literally run the numbers and be like, what's my post-tax salary going to be? And okay, wow. So my post-tax salary is $3,000 a month and my debt payment is $700. That's actually, you know, that's a lot. That's a huge chunk of your post-tax salary. Like, run those numbers if you can, because I just feel like it will help you earlier on. Or at the very least, be like, okay, I know that, you know, making $3,000 out of college is, it's going to be kind of hard to pay my debt payment. So I'm going to try to look for a job that's at this pay and then get rid of my debt. And then I'll pivot into a different career that maybe has a little bit of a lower salary, but is more of what I want to do. Or like, it just allows you to think through the financial side of things sooner. So I definitely would have done that had
definitely.
I rewind it a bit.
Yeah. My idea of student loans going into college was that everyone gets into six-figure student loan debt and that I should be able to go to whatever college I want to, because I worked really hard in high school to be able to get into those colleges. And luckily I had parents that were kind of on the opposite end that were like, Erin, you're going into a business degree. Like, you should really like think through this. They were very, very against the idea of me getting into a high amount of debt. And I graduated just under 40,000. And I was so thankful when I graduated that I did not have six figures of student loan debt. And that can be like an entire separate topic. But yeah, I think if my either high school guidance counselor or the college admissions person was like, okay, you're probably looking at around 50K in debt, and that's going to be a monthly payment of $500 a month for 10 years after you graduate. I think if they would have put it into perspective like that, so many more kids would be like, okay, that's crazy. Like 10 years after I graduate, $500 a month, or 700 or 900, depending on your loan balance. Like, that is so long. It's so long.
It is. Yeah. And when it takes up such a big portion of your budget, you don't have as much left over to make a surplus payment, which the surplus payments are really what's going to help chip away at your debt and really allow you to pay it off faster. So student debt. Yeah, we can do a whole episode on that. Yeah, that's crazy.
We definitely can. But we are running out of time. So I'm going to do one last one that's kind of like a quick one and probably a good one to wrap us up on. We definitely talk about this a lot here on the podcast, on our social channels, but it's something that I just like to remind everyone, I guess, like remind our 18-year-old selves, because people get really down on themselves about like not being good with their money or not feeling like they understand money, not being financially literate. But what I like to say is being good with your money and being financially literate is only 10% about skill and knowledge and 90% about financial discipline. So if you are 18 years old entering adulthood, or whether you are just starting your journey to become better with your money, you're not very far away from knowing really everything you need to know. There isn't that much to actually like learn about money. The concepts are pretty basic. There's a small learning curve, especially when it comes to something like investing. There's a small learning curve. But if you read like 2 personal finance books, you probably know everything that you need to know to be very good with your money and very financially literate. But the part that's going to be hard and the part that you're going to need to continue to work at is the financial discipline piece, because at the end of the day, your spending habits are what completely determines whether you have money left over at the end of the month to save, to invest, to pay down debt. So just kind of like remembering that and not getting disheartened that you didn't learn this earlier or you didn't start sooner, because there isn't that much to learn. You're just really going to need to put your time and energy into remaining financially disciplined. But with that being said, that wraps up today's episode of the Girls Talk Money podcast. This was such a fun one. I love when we have like these kind of like Grace and I each make our lists and kind of go back and forth, because we do balance each other out so well and have like such different perspectives on things. If you have any questions or if you have any other topics you want to hear us cover on the Girls Talk Money podcast, definitely leave them in Spotify. We also love your feedback, so let us know how you're feeling about the episodes, and if there's anything else you want to hear us cover. But thanks for tuning in to the Girls Talk Money podcast, and until next week.